you for being a Bump2 subscriber. You help make this podcast possible. The second part of my conversation with Julie, we touch upon many topics, and I ask one of my most difficult but favorite questions. If you could rewrite your story, would you? Losing people is never easy, and I don't think the grief ever totally goes away. But I think the things that you focused on and that you write about are really profound in terms of dealing with something like this. I don't think they're easy, but I think that if you can break it down into these five categories, or they were what choosing what you focus on, learning, continuing to learn, physical activity, making new personal connections, and giving. Each of those are so powerful in their own right. Mm. And you checked every single box, whether it was intentionally or not.
Well, you know, it wasn't intentional. It wasn't something I thought, right, this is what I'm going to do. It actually wasn't until I sat down to write Grief on the Run and was reflecting on the structure I would use to try and convey my story that I just, yeah, I realized, you know, I had this sort of epiphany that all these things I'd done fitted so well into those five categories, and actually a lot of them, you know, cross categories. So, for example, I went off to Melbourne in 2019 and undertook a new qualification, which was called Diploma in Positive Psychology. And by doing so, it was massive new learning, which was hugely exciting and stimulating and rewarding. But it was also meeting new people. It was also choosing what I focused on. So those things don't stand alone. You know, they can go across a number of those categories at a time, which obviously then you're getting additional benefit.
Yeah, you use the term resilience psychology. How would you define that?
So resilience psychology, people always think is this magical kind of a resilience being a magical trait that some people have, some people don't. Not true at all. So resilience is essentially a definition of how we cope when times are tough. And, you know, then the thought being, well, you must have to have these superhuman powers to be resilient and to, you know, come out on top. But the fact of the matter is it's actually about whatever works for any given person in terms of being able to cope with adversity. So for me, it was those things. I do think that the five ways to well-being that I write about do resonate with a lot of people because they're not difficult to understand, and they can be, you know, they can be adapted and applied in several different sort of models of grief, be it loss of loved people, be it loss of a job, be it financial, you know, pressure, be it relationship breakdown. Those things can be really applied. But so resilience is about working out the strategies for yourself that are going to help you adjust to and accommodate to whatever adversity you've struck and, you know, the bump in the road. It's not a magical thing. It can be taught, it can be learned, and it's just about how we cope with adversity, what traits we already have in our personalities and our toolbox that we've learned, what we can learn from others in our reading, in our attending, maybe, you know, something, listening to a podcast, whatever that sort of just really resonates with us and allows us that ability to move forward.
You know, to me, it also speaks to the idea of neuroplasticity, in that we can continue to evolve, change our, grow our brains, I'll say, for the lack of a better word, and I think, and form those new connections. And I think forming those new connections to create a new life is one of the really vital pieces of what you wrote about.
Yeah, so, you know, and that what we're talking about here kind of falls into the coined term of post-traumatic growth. It really does, because it is about growth in the wake of trauma. I mean, there's no doubt I was traumatized by the loss of, well, particularly Sam, obviously, the manner of his death and coming so, you know, so quickly on the following his dad's. Paul's, yeah, you're right, we had a lot more time to prepare for that, and the anticipatory grief is a whole different ball game. It's a roller coaster pre the passing, whereas shock, horror, acute grief is a roller coaster after the passing, is probably a good way of thinking about it. But I grew so much. I've grown so much in my new connections and my newfound ability to actually sit down and pen a book. and undertaking some of those, you know, big, hairy, audacious goals and feeling so proud at managing to do new things that I hadn't done before and to do them well even was hugely rewarding and stimulating and inspires one on to do more. I've always loved Maslow. So you're familiar with Maslow's hierarchy of needs and the sort of analogy there of, you know, meeting those the basic requirements of in our lives of food and shelter and warmth and whatever. But the top of that Maslow's triangle being self-actualization, which when we get to the peak and we realize what we're capable of. And I think I surprised myself and probably to a little bit in the 3 years since Paul and Sam's death and what I actually was capable of. The risk of sounding less than humble.
This is a tough question. This is a tough question. But if you could rewrite your story, would you?
Oh, that is a tough question. Oh. Look, I have to say no. You know? I mean, I'm immensely sad at having lost my husband and, you know, co-future grandparents and et cetera, et cetera. Immensely sad. Absolutely destroyed to have lost Sam at the age of 27, not only for myself and my loss, but for everything that he had ahead of him. And, you know, losing life at 27 doesn't allow you to go on and live that full life. But in terms of what it has now meant for me, in terms of finding a deeper existence, a more meaningful existence, a less, well, the opposite of that, a less trite existence. But I can honestly, hand on heart, say that I'm probably a better person for having suffered those losses. I don't sweat the small stuff anymore. I'm kinder. I'm probably more motivated, and I'm optimistic enough to, optimistic and realistic at the same time, enough to realise that life isn't predictable. I'm not the only one that will suffer and has suffered, you know, enormous grief and adversity. But we can go on to live a really good life for ourselves and for others in spite of that. Of course, you know, I'd love them to walk through the door tomorrow, but the reality is that they're not going to, and I have to honour the love that we had as, you know, in my marital relationship, in our family relationship, in my relationship with my son, by doing them justice and carrying on everything they taught me as well.
I think that's wise. There's no going back for any of us. And the question becomes, how do we move forward? And what do we do with these events? And I think that if you can find a way to, as you say, use the difficulty towards greater self-actualization, you create a new life, and it can be a really wonderful life. It's not without sadness, but it can be a good life.
Yeah, it really can. And I mean, I have to add to that that, you know, that Paul taught all of us, so Paul was my husband, taught all of us so much in the way he dealt with his cancer. So you imagine going into the doctor's room and being told that you have a pancreatic tumour. Yes, we can remove it, but, you know, the reality is that all that's going to do is extend your life by a bit. We don't know how long by. So it's a pretty big thing to live with. And he, I wouldn't say embraced that, but he just from the get-go, he's the one that taught me those five ways to well-being, or the way he chose to live with his cancer. He upped the ante with, you know, his what he focused on, who he connected with, what he gave of himself and his resources. It was beautiful. And it wasn't until I started writing Grief on the Run that I realised that. And I thought, oh, you know, just by symbiosis, I kind of learnt so much from the way he chose to live his life with a terminal illness.
I think the choice to choosing what we focus on is so important. Mm. Oh my gosh. And it is a choice.
It is a choice. And it's different things for different people. I mean, you know, for me, it's nature and its beauty. It's sunrises, it's the sea gently lapping the beach. You know, that's where I live. That's what I choose to focus on. For other people, it's other things. That said, we do know that there are things that we can focus on that aren't really helpful or healthy in the long run, and those are some of those, you know, addictive behaviours, really, substances, gambling, all those things that sort of give us the short-term pleasure, the buzz, but ultimately probably don't allow us to live a healthy life focusing on, we call it hunt the good stuff. There's a hashtag, actually, the American Army use it. I think it's HTGS, hashtag, hunt the good stuff. And it's, yeah, it's about really being mindful about what you focus on, depending on where you live, depending on your interests, depending on, yeah, what excites you, you know.
I think one of the people that I've found so influential with that is Eckhart Tolle. And one of the things that he emphasizes is be here now. And often if you can force yourself to truly be here in the moment, this moment is okay.
Yes, that's right. And it can be fearful to be in that moment, you know, depending on what's going on for you. But the more you try and kind of fight it or try and escape it, it probably only exacerbates that, actually. You know, you can have a short term. I mean, you know, there's a role for distraction for sure, but we also all have to get better at being able to be comfortable in that moment and processing.
What's ahead for you?
So the latest BHAG for 2021 we're in now was that at the beginning of July I commenced full-time, recommenced the eternal student, full-time study at an institute here in Christchurch called ARA. So I'm doing, learning the Māori language, so the language of Te Reo, which is a beautiful language full of absolutely beautiful metaphors, actually, called Whakatauki, which you would love. Lots of kind of one-liners that just, you know, embody an idea or a principle in beautiful language. So I've got my head down doing that at the moment. I, in the years since Paul and Sam passed away, my next son down, Jared, has delivered me two beautiful grandchildren. So one is 20 months old, Quinn, and he's just the apple of my eye. And then they added to the brood with 7-week-old Ruby just recently. So that's, you know, I spent about a day thinking I'm too young to be a grandmother before I just embraced it. And it's just massively rewarding and see, you know, quite a lot of them. And then I've been lucky enough to find love again. So, again, about 20 months ago, met a beautiful man, Henry, and we have had a relationship across two cities, lots of commuting and having, you know, a lovely time, lots of adventures, and he finally has shifted down here to Christchurch to be with me, and we're getting married next April.
Congratulations, that is really great.
Thank you, yeah.
What final words of advice would you have for somebody facing just enormous grief?
I guess, yeah. I wrote Grief on the Run really, I mean, to get my internal story out. I felt that so much had happened in a short space of time that I really felt a strong urge to pen it so that we wouldn't forget it, so that it could be something that could be passed down the generations for the, you know, the grandchildren, etc., to have some sense of who their granddad was, who their Uncle Sam was, etc. But it obviously became bigger and has been, you know, out there in the published world. And my message would be that grief is idiosyncratic. There's no orderly, predicted fashion to how it plays out. But I think it's really important to give ourselves the permission when we experience adversity or grief that we can continue to live life and live a good life with the grief tracking alongside, because it will. You can't push it away. It will happen. Physiologically, it happens in the body. The emotions are processed. But the theories of old was that we did have to sort of go into a period of mourning and halt life as it was and then emerge, you know. Victorian times or the past theories of grief have been very much that you put life on hold while you grieve and then come back to life. But I disagree. I think it's important to, yeah, allow oneself the permission to just keep on living your life. Don't berate yourself if you have slow days, down days, but know that, you know, time is a great healer, and there are lots that you can do to help yourself along the way. And I guess my messages of some of the ways to do that are in my book, Grief on the Run. Not only as a bereaved person, but also as a person living a life with a terminal illness.
I really enjoyed reading your book, and I really was really taken with the wisdom that came out of it. I think it's a roadmap for just about anybody, anytime, and I think people really need roadmaps.
Thank you. Yeah, I've had, you know, there wouldn't be a day goes by that since the book's been published that I get a message from someone who I don't know. So here we go, new connections, which is fantastic. Who have found me on Facebook or on Messenger or and have written me. They've just felt compelled to write to me and say how much the book helped them, how much it resonated with whatever their particular story was. So often people have started it on one day and the risk of flattering myself, just not being able to put it down. So I've had lots of messages from people that have written at 4 or 5 in the morning, having just been on a bender with the book. And I think it does provide a bit of a roadmap. It's not the only roadmap, but it is a potential roadmap.
Thank you for joining us today. I hope you found something in today's podcast that inspires you along your own life's path. Because sometimes a bump in the road is actually a portal into a more conscious and meaningful life. You can subscribe to our free podcast at www.bumpintheroad.us or become a premium member to hear the full conversation. Just go to www.bumpintheroad.us for more information and to sign up.